Welcome to the Changing Panels podcast, where we discuss what's happening in and around the best comic book adaptations for the television screen. This week, we're trying a brand new format and shifting things around. We'll bring you some news. We're going to talk about some over-the-top and thrilling plot points that we needed to get out of the way. And then we're going to dive into a topic for the week, followed up by that thing that we find interesting. My name is John Johnson, and I collect my thoughts on currently film at truestword.com and quite a bit of stuff on Twitter, come what may.
And my name is Nick Hogan. You can find my thoughts exponentially increasing on tvovermind.com and mostly other than that on Twitter.
Yes, yes, yes. So it's time for our periodic update of what you cover on TV Overmind. And I highly recommend that you all just go out and search out all of Nick's articles, regardless of whether or not you watch the show. Mm-hmm. Put some shekels in the boy's pocket.
Yes, I would very much appreciate that. I am covering – I'll start with Monday because Gallivant just ended. So Monday I have Superstore.
Which is a new pickup.
Mm-hmm.
Your first one was this week, right?
Yes.
You did a preview article and then a review.
Yeah, and that'll pretty much be the norm now.
Are you doing preview articles for everything, too?
Pretty much. If I can't do them, somebody else will do them, so I might as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Superstore on Mondays. Tuesdays, I'm back with The Muppets, which started back last night. Wednesday, I got nothing. Thursday, I have The Big Bang Theory, The Blacklist, The 100, and I added Shades of Blue, which I have screeners for the first 8 episodes, and that's the only reason I agreed to do it, because it's on Thursday, and Thursday's hard enough.
I'm glad this isn't a video podcast, because my face just sort of dropped when you said that. I'm like, what?
Yeah, so I have some limited screener access to a few channels at this point, and so I'm still a little behind. I got to catch up on Shades of Blue before, and I have to write a review before it ends tomorrow night. So that's all of my stuff on Thursday, and then Friday nights I'm doing ABC's Last Man Standing.
Wow.
So.
You picked up quite a few new things.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So that's my reviews right now. I have an author page on TV Overmind, so you can just find my stuff by clicking on my name.
Excellent. Well, let's jump into some news. We got a couple of things, both exciting and not. First up, Jeff Johns, the chief creative officer of DC properties, DC television, movies, comic books, I'm not sure. It's a division of Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Has claimed that even though TNT has passed on the Titans, or New Teen Titans, or Teen Titans pilot, they aren't quite done with the property yet. Not saying what that might mean, but they are leaving their options open. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts?
Well, it's not totally surprising. I mean, surely in this day and age, they can find a taker to televise that property, or put it in a movie, or what have you. Surely they can find somebody to do something with it, mm-hmm. and they can make some money off of it at least. That was my gut feeling. I was like, oh, good, they're gonna shop it around so they don't waste anything.
I must have had a dream where I thought Roy Harper and a Robin character and a bunch of different characters were – this definitely was a dream because it doesn't make any sense. But I thought, this could take Legends of Tomorrow's place on the CW. Not that I don't know that they won't do a second season of Legends of Tomorrow. I don't think there's been any indication one way or the other at this point. But you know, a team up of the people that have left all those different shows, say it's Sarah and Roy Sarah's not really it could be Sarah. Firestorm and a couple of others, younger characters and do sort of a very CW version of a superhero team. Mm-hmm. But that obviously all came out of my fertile imagination over the last 48 hours since that story broke. Yeah, I'm fine with him moving on with it. I kind of feel we might be at peak superhero television, perhaps. Mm-hmm. It's all getting a little repetitive, which is why we're shaking up our format a little bit.
Right.
But at the same token, I love a lot of those characters, and I love the DC property. So I say, give it a shot. What the hell could it hurt?
Yeah.
If I don't like it, I don't have to watch anymore.
Right,
Lucifer?
they're making bad shows left and right anyway, so, I mean, you might as well go for it.
Next piece of news is, which I hope you'll appreciate the segue. Tom Welling was asked of whether or not he would appear in Supergirl, and he says, well, nobody's asked me, but I don't know, it's a great show. But the people that they have asked, is Grant Gustin. Grant Gustin will be appearing later this spring in at least for an episode of Supergirl. No indication really of anything about plot or if he's going to be in full Flash mode or if it's a Barry Allen thing or what. But, you know, if I want to see Supergirl and the Flash race, I want to see them race around the world. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's my thing. Any thoughts, good, bad, indifferent?
I'm interested. They've been talking about it forever and you're like, oh, they've kind of downplayed it and now they're doing it. So, I think it has the potential to be really cool.
Yeah. I agree. It would have been earth-shattering, I think, at one point for a character from one network to appear on another network show. Except that it happens, you know, more oftentimes than not. The practice and Ally McBeal did it in the late 90s. The Detective Munch from Law and Order, I think. Law and Order. Homicide: Life on the Streets has appeared in 3 or 4 different shows, including The X-Files and any number of stuff all throughout the 90s. And recently, Matt Ryan took his Constantine character over to Arrow after being on NBC. Mm-hmm. They're both owned by the producing organization is Warner Brothers, DC Comics, obviously. But the CW is really just a subsidiary of CBS Network and Warner Brothers when they had a network. So it makes sense if there's going to be a cohesive tie-in, it would happen this way. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see Flash get bogged down by crossover storylines anymore this season.
Me either.
I'm all about it. Anything that could make Supergirl better would be okay in my book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other news?
I got nothing.
All right. We'll be right back with our Plot Points Corner. Welcome to our new segment called Plot Points, where we're going to sort of briefly rush over any of the big issues or questions or anything that we might have concerning any of the shows that aired since the last podcast. First up, the biggest plot point of the week is that one of the leads of Legends of Tomorrow has been murdered. Hawkman, spoiler, Hawkman took a knife to the chest, right? Was it a knife?
Yeah. Yeah, it was the knife. The knife that he killed him with
the knife
first
that
time.
Was supposed to. The knife that was supposed to kill Vandal Savage forever.
Right.
Oops. Okay, so what did you think? Were you surprised that they killed him off in the second episode?
I was a little surprised. I mean, I'm not sure what I was expecting, but it wasn't that. It wasn't like shock. It was like caught me off guard. Like, okay. But I guess...
Well,
when they.
But part of, I agree with you there, and I just want, because the reason why I agree with you that it sort of caught me off guard, but I was more like you were okay. It's because I don't care
right
about the Hawks, which is not what they should be doing.
I think that they mean for the story to be about her. And
yeah.
That's because she's been a little more involved in the Flash, and she had that storyline with Cisco. First thing I thought was, oh, good, she can date Cisco. Because I like that. But that's kind of why I think they did it. It's just, I was like, well, you know, thinking back, it's the story has obviously been about her, and he's been more of a driving the plot in that scenario. So... you know, it didn't bother me, I guess, because I was like, well, now that she's remembered all this stuff, they don't really need him anymore.
Except, this show's all about time travel, too, so...
Well, and it's not like he's reincarnated how many times?
I mean, he's... Exactly. So it's not like... So they're going to go to the Old West soon. Mm-hmm. He'll be there.
Right.
He'll be Nighthawk. They'll go to, you know, what else? Oh, they're doing World War II as well. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that he's there as well.
Probably.
So I think that we're, even though he's dead, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not in every single episode from here on out.
Yeah, and that's a good way to include the actor without, like, cheating death, like Sarah Lance style.
Yeah.
Stuff that I'm getting really tired of seeing.
It is. It becomes really troublesome and bothersome, and I guess that's another reason why it's like, oh, okay,
right, right.
Because not because of the Sarah moment, though that's a huge part of it, or the Ray Palmer moment, or the Robbie Amell moment, because he ain't dead either.
Right.
But it's just that I knew that, you know, he's been reincarnated and we're time traveling, so we're just going to keep running into him, and you know he's. He wasn't, yes, they pushed Kiara heavier pre the show. You know, that was one of the first characters that was mentioned as they were sending out a casting notice this war.
Right.
But, I don't know, I just, my lack of involvement or investment in either of those actors, though I do think that he... his name's Falk Henshaw. I think he's a little bit better than she is. And the fact that, you know, death doesn't really seem to take here in the DC universe. Just, like, yeah, sort of left me go, huh, okay.
Yeah.
I can wait a week.
Yep.
And I guess that's where I am with the show, too. It's like, okay. I'm waiting for it to get really good.
Right.
I think it could get there. I just am waiting for it to get there. Mm-hmm. Our next thing that we wanted to talk about plot point wise was all the business with iZombie.
Yes.
And thank goodness iZombie's back.
Yes.
Huzzah. We've missed it. This was episode 11, 50 Shades of Grey. And pretty much it was... What I really liked about this episode and plot wise is that they weren't hiding stuff from each other. I mean, once Peyton heard this stuff about Blaine, her and her CI, she went to Liv right away, and Liv's like, "Oh my God, no, stop, don't do this." And that was such a great real moment in between the two of them. And, you know, you shouldn't, I mean, yeah, you know, you've got to break away from him. And then Peyton saying, you know, you never really know somebody when you, even after you've slept with them. And we turn around and, we find out that, Liv has slept with Drake because she's had the porny librarian. And I did like how they kept saying porny with a P instead of
right.
Horny with an H all night long. That was very funny to me. But no, yeah, those plots all twisting and them trying to arrest Blaine and then she getting him off and just sort of bubbling everything up to a faster boil, I think is really good. I keep... I keep getting concerned that something bad might happen to Peyton, which I would not like to see happen.
Right.
But because she's not a regular on the show, that makes me nervous. What did you think of all of the who's sleeping with who shenanigans of iZombie?
First of all, what Peyton said about, you think you know someone and then you sleep with them and then you find out whatever she said. I just watched it, so I should know. That's kind of like the theme of the season, I think. Because not only did Liv and Peyton both get in that situation, but Major was in that situation. And
But he doesn't even know yet, right?
Right. No, he doesn't. And I I feel like, I don't know, I still don't trust this FBI lady that Clive is sleeping with.
Oh, my God, I love her.
I just don't trust her.
What a great relationship, yeah. And how long have they been sleeping together? I didn't remember that from before the break.
Oh, it was a few episodes.
Okay.
It wasn't like they didn't start right before.
But they're not playing into it really strongly, which I think is great.
Right.
But obviously Liv knows. She was teasing him about it.
Right. Yeah.
But how great was Liv in trying to convince Major and Robbie to
wrestle.
But even better was Major's like, yeah, whatever.
Oh, man. I'd forgotten that they called the dog Minor. And it just killed me. And it also broke my heart because of what happened with the dog.
If you didn't know, nothing bad happened to the dog.
Right, it made that sound worse. Right. They let the dog go, and it was heartbreaking. Anyway, what I was going to bring up was I thought that Peyton and Blaine sleeping together was a major plot point because in a couple episodes ago, they discovered that the cure isn't permanent. And so I'm just curious as to the repercussions of that and, you know, what's going to happen to her or the girl that Major's been sleeping with or that had been sleeping with.
But does Major know that yet?
I don't know.
I think Robbie and
Liv are the only ones that know.
Okay. Because Blaine definitely doesn't know.
Right.
But it still has to be they have to break the skin, so it'd have to be like scratching the back or, you know, something like that that would infect the other. I don't know. Don't want everybody on the show to become a zombie.
Right. I'm wondering what's going to happen. That's all. That's interesting enough to.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Boy, it's a good show. I'm so glad it's back.
Yeah.
So glad it's back.
Yeah, it's really great.
Last plot point we want to talk about real quick is my own stupidity. And that's on Agent Carter. And what the hell the dark matter is. When it first started, I was pretty sure that it was the obelisk piece of space junk inhuman stuff that sucked Simmons to the other planet. Because wasn't there some of those symbols of the club on the other planet?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So I thought that's what it was. But everything that I read is saying, no, it's not that. It is what Doctor Strange is going to be dealing with in his next movie, or in his upcoming movie in November. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? And then it works a little bit differently than the obelisk does on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but still sucks people away.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's... In Agent Carter, it's sucking them into Whitney?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe? I don't know. What's happening, Nick? Tell me.
I really am not sure. I don't think they're dying. I think they're going somewhere, but I don't necessarily know what that means or what that is. Or maybe she is absorbing them. I really have no idea. Because every time she does it, the crack gets bigger.
Yeah, the crack gets bigger in her face.
But I'm confused. Well, and then like the Wilkes was exposed to it, and he's just corporeal, not quite corporeal anymore. Like,
yeah, they can't touch, right?
Yeah, he's there, but he can't be touched. He's a ghost.
But we're about halfway through this season. Yeah? 10 episodes? This was episode 4?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And I would thought we would have gotten a better handle of what this thing was. And I guess that's okay for it to just be mysterious, but if it weren't so similar to everything that happened this fall on Agent Carter, I don't think I care.
Right.
I don't think I would care. Right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm pretty much watching this show. Like, I love the show. Like, I love Haley mm-hmm. Atwell. I had a dream the other night that I was married to her. I wasn't mad about it.
Your wife is not listening.
Anyway, so I love the show, but I'm driven by what the heck is going on when I watch the show.
Yeah. I'm with you. It confuses me. I'm more driven by Haley Atwell. I just think she's terrific, and Jarvis, James Darcy.
He was great.
I think they're terrific, and I like that Stark gave him an out and said that he could just be with Peggy instead of having to worry about him when he was in his episode last week. The rest of it, and I like the visual elements of the show. I still hate, as I hated a year ago, how dark it is. Literally, they need to turn on more lights. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's some really cool things. I like that, you know, Wilkes can't be touched, and I think that's horrifying. And patterning that off of, or not patterning it, but playing that off of where Steve Rogers is for Peggy right now in her mind,
yeah.
And how she abandoned, or she, you know, didn't go through with her wedding because of the death of her brother and all that stuff. It's, you know, the girl ain't got no luck in love.
Right. Yeah, man, that poor lady. no, yeah, that's, I love watching her. I was proud of myself for figuring out right before it happened that, those same guys that are putting the pressure on Thompson are affiliated with the guy who's running for Senate and married to the crazy lady. So I figured that out. And then about 10 minutes later, Peggy and Sousa figured it out. But still.
Well, and shouldn't we know more of the characters, the bad guys' characters' names other than Whitney Frost? It's the only one I know. I don't know what her husband's name is. I'm looking at the list right now. It's Calvin Chadwick.
Yeah, he's the district attorney on Murder in the First. That's how I knew him.
Yeah, I mean, I know the actor. I know the actor more than I know the character's name. Mm-hmm. That's weird. And the guy that Red is playing, what's his name?
I don't know. I was like, look, Red Foreman.
I know. and keeps sucking up to Thompson.
Right.
Or Chad Michael Murray, or whatever we're calling him. Yeah, I don't know. Gosh, it's an odd show for me. I really do like it. I do like it. I think it's a better show than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think it's a better show than some of the other, even some of the DC shows. But I just am not, as invested by it, and I get confused by this stupid thing in the... That's sucking people away. That isn't sucking them to Simmons' planet.
Right.
Makes me sad. Oh, well. So, we'll be back in a minute to talk about our theme for the week.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
All right. welcome to our newest section where we're going to bring up a topic and just sort of freeball it on all the different shows that are currently in the comic book television universe, of which there are many, but we also might throw in some things about from the past. This week we're going to talk about The Other. And what I mean by The Other is this age-old tradition going back to Shakespeare's times, Shakespearean times, and it's used in novels, and maybe even back to the ancient Greeks. I can't really say that out loud a lot, but where a character meets his duplicate. It's not necessarily always have to be an evil twin, but in the comic book tropes, more oftentimes than not, it is an evil version or a twisted version or a messed up, psychologically darker version of our main protagonist. It doesn't always have to be that way, but it tends to be that. Like I said, this has been around for years and years and years. Nick, I mean, we've seen this probably not realizing it probably the entire time we've ever watched television or movies. What is your immediate take when this happens to a character?
Oh, well, it's just, it really depends on how it's, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I'm going to say to the people that are listening, we're both actors.
Yeah.
And so we might approach it a little bit differently as far as what it might mean for us as an actor. But go ahead. What were you going to say? It's how it is handled for each show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's used in for with varying degrees of success based on what it's trying to accomplish. Like when Felicity was dealing with the emo version of herself. That's all about self-reflection and trying to figure out who she is now, and why she is the way she is now, and which way she should be. It's used as introspective, but it could also be,
well, and that sort of reminds me, and this is us going to be throwing back to an older show. When I think of, and I didn't watch all of Smallville, but when I think of Smallville and I think of this sort of concept, it wasn't so much Clark meeting Bizarro, like Kara met Bizarro and Supergirl.
Mm.
I think of Clark going under the influence of Red Kryptonite.
Right.
And him becoming a twisted version, which is, you know, sort of a weird play on this, but the same sort of thing where you sort of encounter a different facet of your personality and you get a chance for self-reflection. And that's what I took away from those Red Kryptonite episodes from the early seasons of Smallville,
mm-hmm.
was that it was a chance for Clark to cut loose in ways that he wasn't normally allowed to cut loose,
mm-hmm.
and to realize this isn't what I want.
Right.
This isn't how I want to use my powers. I want to use my powers for good. This isn't, there's no moral compass here. And that's very important to me. Whereas that was, you know, manifest in Felicity fighting herself in this week's Arrow episode, and not physically fighting herself. Obviously it was just a battle of wills and literally a battle of willpower, and her having the willpower to go back and put, you know, the injury aside and, you know, marshal efforts for the team and got her own code name in the offing, but it wasn't Oracle. Oh, well. Is it... Do you remember what it was?
No, I don't. I don't remember.
I'll look it up. Go ahead.
I think the introspective kind of... That kind of, you know, self-reflection is, you know, and not just Bizarro... That's just not just supposed to be a play on words. But there's... You know, there's also... I think with, I'm trying to figure, I know what I want to say. Like with May and Agent 33, where.
Oh, like the clone version, the broken version in a lot of ways.
Right.
I mean, that was so interesting about Agent 33 in May was that I really liked Agent 33 because she wasn't perfect.
Right.
You know, and she had some emotion to her that I didn't get to see in May. And what was interesting about that whole sequence was, for me, it allowed May to have a moment of introspection, in so much that she could see she really can't be this closed off wall. Mm-hmm. She's because the Agent 33, and now this is me probably pushing too much into the subtext, but since the Agent 33 encounter, May has become a lot more open to the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. And we found out more about her with her husband, with Andrew, and all of that sort of thing, which we didn't until we got to see the faulty version of her.
Right.
Which, you know, in my mind, worked a lot better.
Yeah.
For dramatic purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Felicity's new code name is not Oracle, but Overwatch.
Okay. Yep. I knew it was something like that, but...
I knew it had an O.
In Smallville, I think they called, what's her name, Clock Tower? Or they referred Watchtower. They called her Watchtower. What?
Chloe?
Yeah, it was originally Chloe, and then they started calling what's-her-face, Tessa.
Oh, yeah.
Started calling her Watchtower when Chloe was out of commission or gone or something. She left the show.
Chloe left,
yeah,
right?
She was only gone for a season, or like half a season, because she was still in 6 or 7 episodes of the last season.
That's what I thought.
But, yeah, Tessa took that over. I can't remember her name. Tess.
Mm-hmm.
And they called her Watchtower, too. Anyway, that wasn't really the point.
that's good to know. That was my non-Smallville time.
I also think that it might be about, like, some of this stuff might just be to break up monotony.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we talk about that's we're changing format because a lot of the shows are holding steady in terms of what they're doing and what they're not doing. And they're good. But there's just nothing groundbreaking happening,
right?
But and I will have to use a different show to a non-comic book show to make my point. But
no,
like when Dean was a demon in Supernatural, it broke the norm, and now there's something going on in Supernatural that if you're not watching, I'm not sure I want to spoil it for you. But that's happening again, where there's a character that's a long-standing character that gets to play a totally different angle. And it's really interesting.
Well, and Sam, I mean, one of the seasons I watched, Sam was the same way.
Yeah,
so they each get a chance to do that. And I think you're right, and this is what I was saying earlier, as actors, you know, I loved it when Tom Welling got to be Red Kryptonite Clark,
mm-hmm.
because he was having so much fun.
Right.
So much fun. Now, another thing that happens, and I think happened is implicit in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but they don't get to do it a lot, is when they go undercover and they get to be themselves but get to act like somebody else. I can still think of one of the times where, early on, where May and... Brett Dalton's character, whose name is escaping me, Ward, went undercover, and she was having a ball and so much fun and laughing. And I thought, well, I want to see more of this. That's the kind of May that I would like to see. And so it's really kind of cool to watch these actors that we've grown play this one kind of role and see them have a little bit more range. And, you know, I think that's an immediate reason why they might do it with Felicity. Or I think particularly when we talk about, and you know, the elephant in this room is the Flash, which at this point this season we will see doppelgangers of every character.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we've seen 2 Harrison Wells, 3 if you count the one that Eobard Thawne took over the role for.
Right.
Next week we're spoiler, they're going to Earth 2 next week.
I knew that was coming.
There's pictures of of characters that we haven't seen their doppelgangers yet in the doppelganger form. So except for the West, there weren't any pictures of the West or no shots of the West from Earth 2, which is interesting, given your thought about perhaps who might be under the Zoom mask. But yeah, this whole season, and now we've seen Jay Garrick's doppelganger in an episode ago with Hunter Solomon, and there's so much going on there that I have to believe that ultimately is going to be one of the big themes of this whole season, is about, you know, who you are and how you can play against your expectations, or if you're your own self-fulfilling prophecy. And to me, the only, so far in Flash, the big thing that we can pull from, other than Harrison Wells and Harry Wells, would be the Linda Park stuff, when she was Dr. Light and Linda Park, and Linda Park trying to pretend to be Linda Park from Earth 2 to trick Zoom and all that sort of stuff, that sequence, which was one of my highlights of the first half of the season.
Yeah.
I thought that was really great. Because, again, it was an opportunity, as you were saying just a second ago, for the actor to cut loose and play with it and do some different kinds of stuff that we're not used to seeing, which is really exciting and interesting as an audience. But, you know, it also sort of was starting to pick the scab of what is the theme of the other, and how does that relate to essentially an entire production and how they're going to relate to each other. And I hope that it doesn't all boil down to who trusts who and who doesn't trust who, but instead it gets a chance for some of those simple introspection moments like Felicity got to have this week. Mm-hmm. What do you make of something like Bizarro and Supergirl? Or Bizarro and Clark, and we were talking off air that Smallville did do Bizarro plot at one point. When was that? Was that really late?
I don't know that it was really late.
I would have thought I would have remembered it.
I'm 100% certain that they did it.
Okay.
But I'll have to look it up now because I don't know exactly when, but I can find out. Let's see.
Well,
Season 7.
Okay, so yeah, I wasn't watching at that point. It's probably right after I stopped.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Bizarro is another... It's kind of a different beast in the sense that it's not really them.
Yeah.
And it's more about...
more like the May and Agent 33.
Right.
Aspect. But... Was on Smallville, was it created to be something to hate Clark? As Maxwell Lord created this Bizarro to be,
not recalling,
to hate Kara
very well. It's been a little while since I watched this show.
I understand. That's cool. That's no big deal. I was a little taken aback by it. I didn't care for it in Supergirl this week.
Right.
For me, it was the weakest example of the other, not just this week, but, you know, of recent comic book history. Melissa Benoist got to only play Bizarro for part of the episode.
Right.
And it was too similar. It was... And perhaps it's just because I like the concept of the classic Bizarro, not necessarily having to come from a square planet and everything is opposite, but that Bizarro backwards talk about me hate Supergirl would mean that he loves Supergirl, or she loves Supergirl. I miss that piece of it a lot, and because I think it's really funny, and this wasn't funny at all.
Right.
I think that is a key moment to doing some of this dual role, some of this other part, this another facet of the other, is that it is fun.
Yeah.
I like watching May kick May's ass.
Mm-hmm.
I like watching the twisted Felicity goad the good Felicity and the good Felicity triumphing over that. It's just something fun about it. I didn't care for Melissa Benoist to be punching Melissa Benoist.
Right.
I don't know. It was weird. My wife walked through the room while I was watching it, and she goes, boy, are the special effects always like this? Because this really isn't very good. And this was some of the flying wire work. I'm like,
right.
Yeah. It's not the greatest. It's not the worst.
Right.
Not the greatest.
I learned that Clark was... I learned that Clark was, or the Bizarro Smallville was created in a laboratory and later discarded and sent to the Kryptonian prison by Jor-El and Martian Manhunter. And then he escaped from the Phantom Zone. And he was like, he didn't have a shape. And then he created it like in the mirror from Clark.
Okay.
So it was a little different, but it was still like a manufactured thing.
Well, and that's sort of similar to one of the current or one of the more recent comic book versions of Bizarro is Lex Luthor got some of the Superman DNA,
mm-hmm.
I think, from when he was killed in the mid-90s or early 90s, and then he wanted to create his own Superman, and because he couldn't, I mean, he is Lex Luthor, it became this imperfect sort of bodyguard version of Superman to Lex Luthor and became broken and twisted and, you know, wreaked havoc and all that sort of stuff. But it was kept on a Luthor leash, which, you know, obviously they were mimicking that most here in this Supergirl episode, I thought, than some of the other versions of the story, which, you know, the classic Bizarro is that he comes from a planet that's actually a big cube,
mm-hmm.
and everything is backwards. The Green Lantern is afraid of everything, and he wears yellow. I think I forget what he's called, Yellow Candle? I don't know. But there's this great, great comic book version of the Bizarros, which sort of sprung out of the Luthor creates the imperfect Superman, mm-hmm. Bizarro. This was the Bizarro that was currently running around the DC Universe at that time. And Jeff Loeb, who is now a big mucky muck at Marvel Television, created a book called Batman and Superman. And it was just a team-up book. And they did this whole sequence with Bizarro creating other Bizarros.
Mm-hmm.
And so he created a Bat-Zarro. And Bat-Zarro spoke the Batman internal monologue in, you know, that you sort of recognize from
right.
The movies. The same sort of monologue. But it would be like thought bubbles. Not thought bubbles, but they don't do thought bubbles anymore. They do captions on each panel. And so there would be captions there, and then his only lines were repeating the captions out loud. It was the greatest horrible Batman joke ever, and it just made me giggle. And so I'm very fond of Bizarro Speak because I think it's very difficult to write. It's very difficult to keep that thread going for a very long time. I was really disappointed that it wasn't in this episode. And I guess I'm just, you know, I'm not as high up on Supergirl as I was pre-New Year's.
Right.
Pre-New Year's, when it was the best of the comic book shows, I was really up on it. But now that Flash and Arrow have gotten much better, it's a little hard to take sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple other things that I think that are interesting with the other. One that popped out to my mind is one that's not, you know, prevalent at all, or is used relatively infrequently. And that's where the producers play a trick on the audience, where the writers and the creators, say, oh, this is who this is. And then you don't realize it until a beat or two beats, you know, after the fact. And I'm thinking particularly of the opening of Agent Carter this season, where this beautiful blue-dressed, red-hatted woman, the very classic Peggy Carter look, is walking into the bank and then proceeds to, you know, cause all the havoc, mm-hmm. because it's not really Peggy Carter, it's Dottie, the underworld, or the Hydra agent.
Right.
And that, to me, that's, you know, it's fun again.
Yeah.
It's something that I enjoyed watching, like, what? What's Peggy? That's not Peggy. You guys.
Right.
It's a twist on that, and it sets up the idea that you can't follow through with your expectations. You can't always believe what you're seeing. And I think that's an important part of this whole other business, is that you can't rely on somebody looking the same and then being the same, that they have an opportunity to chance to grow and to change and perhaps become better from this mirror reflection, whether it's twisted or whether it's a mirror into the past like Felicity. I don't know. It's an interesting thing and obviously prevalent, and, you know, it can tie into a little bit of the secret identity stuff, which I bet we're going to get into at some point in the future on these topics. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts about the other?
I don't think so.
Do you find it still effective, or is it something that's boring you?
I think it really depends on how it's used, mm-hmm. you know, because I don't particularly care for Bizarro Supergirl either. I was totally put off by the fact that it was played by a different actress for part of it.
It was so weird.
I know.
Because because they've been teasing this for 3 weeks.
Right.
Right, since we came back from break. And, you know, she woke, that girl opened up and she had the black eyes. Mm-hmm. And then did she ever have the black eyes?
Yeah, I think so.
Did she have black eyes when she was out of the Kara mask?
Yeah. I don't know. I think she had black eyes the whole time she was out of the Kara mask.
Okay, I didn't notice that. I'm glad. That makes me feel a little better. So they've been teasing it, and I'm like, and you know, when she first appeared, if you knew that Bizarro was coming, then you knew probably what that was. But it's just a girl that looks a lot like Melissa Benoist. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they start developing up a little bit further. Not so much, but Martian Manhunter in another one of his I'm very powerful, but not going to use my powers, really.
Right.
Moments had with her, and then that went away. And then all of a sudden, she looks just like Supergirl. I was intrigued by the injections that was trying to keep her face in Melissa Benoist's face. Mm-hmm. Boy, that Maxwell Lord, if only he would use his powers for good.
Right.
But, yeah, so then, and then once she basically got the crap beat out of her, she no longer looked like Melissa Benoist, and some of the power of that moment was gone. And I wish that they had trusted her as an actress enough to let her do that all the way. Or, do you think they're going to bring the character back?
I don't know.
Can they bring the character back?
I wouldn't count it out. I think they might try again. Maxwell Lord will run out of tricks eventually. Go.
I mean, but he's still in prison. Stuff. Right? He's still in prison.
Yes. Yeah? Okay. Yeah, but I mean, of course, it's never the end.
It's never the end.
I was going to say that on Once Upon a Time, they used this really well a couple of different times in the first half of season 5, where they had Emma was the dark one for a while, and then Emma and Hook were both dark ones, and there was a part where Rumpelstiltskin had taken on Hook's image, and so he was playing the guy that plays Hook was really playing Rumpelstiltskin. And there was a really cool kind of shift in those characters. And so that was all to say that I think it can be done really well. And when it is done really well, I really like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, I would just want to reiterate what we said earlier, when it's fun, I think that is a key piece of it. I think fun is most effective when it can turn and become something heartfelt. But when it's just an excuse for violence, or when it's just an excuse for anger, as opposed to, you know, highlighting something that's just not for me. It's not ever going to stop. I mean, it's literally been around for hundreds of years in every format. I just think because of the whole secret identity trope, and you never really know who is who in superheroes and superhero shows, we're going to see a lot of this in comic book. I don't know that we'll ever see it in The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. You think?
I doubt it.
I mean, the true concept of the other, where you can put a Rick beside Rick, that's not going to happen.
Right.
There's a version of it where they become zombies and you have to put them down.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, sort of evil twin to an extreme, but you don't really get any sort of growth out of that. You don't get any play out of that. It just becomes heartbreaking for the people that have to put you down. I don't know. Cool. Well, I think that'll wrap it up on the other, and we're going to be right back. All right. So it's time for that thing that we find interesting. Nick, what did you find interesting this week?
Well, the Muppets came back this week. and anybody who reads my reviews knows that I was very, it was my reviews of the first 10 episodes were very mixed. They did really, really good stuff, and then they did stuff that was just terrible. And Miss Piggy was more of like a vindictive Kim Kardashian type than Miss Piggy. And I never really cared for Miss Piggy, but I hated her even more the way they did her in the show. Anyway, so they've been advertising this, the changes that are coming. You know, they were making changes to the format of the Muppets, or just kind of the, it wasn't really even the format, but just the tone of the Muppets. And they've been advertising it for months, and I was skeptical. And as soon as I watched the episode last night, I am impressed. It just made me, you know, I care about the Muppets again. It's almost like they're reading my reviews, because there are a couple times where I said, in the age of Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel, Up Late with Miss Piggy doesn't hold a candle. It's just not, it's too stiff, and it's not, they're not, you know, producing viral video clips, and they've got Muppets there. Why aren't they doing crazy things? And it's, this episode addressed that. They did a sketch with Pepe the Prawn as an Uber driver, and Bobo the Bear doing a dramatic reading of Real Housewives of Atlanta, and it was hysterical.
That's some Letterman bit.
It was awesome, and he said, so basically Kermit figures out that they've got the solution to their show's problem within. He figures out that it's, we just need to use our own people and put them on the show, and then it ends with spoilers, Kermit and Piggy singing a song from the 90s as a duet, because their guests get bumped at the last minute. Key and Peele get bumped at the last minute by the branding guru. And so they do this old song, and their chemistry comes flooding back. And it was really, I mean, for Muppet fans like myself, it was wonderful. And I'm so glad that they made these changes, and I hope they stick.
Excellent. I haven't watched the episode yet. In between watching all of the comic book shows and other stuff that my... I was after New Girl. We finished New Girl, and we're getting ready to start the next thing. I saw the one sequence where they were all sitting around the table, and they started to riff and do the theme song.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just... I said to her, she was coming back in the room, I said, this 35 seconds that I just watched was better than anything I saw in the first, whatever, the first half of the season.
That part got me really excited, and I was not disappointed by the rest of it.
It was really cool. I'm anxious to go out and look for it, to go out and watch it whenever I get an opportunity to do so. Mm-hmm. For me, being an actor, something that I found really interesting this week was the live production of Grease Live. Grease Live! Exclamation point. Was just really well done. It was much more theatrically produced while still being much more cinematic and television produced than any of the three musicals that NBC has done. Don't think it's as good as The Wiz was, because The Wiz was really, really good. But this was really great, and there's many, many things that I don't like about it, primarily because they were slavishly devoted to the movie as opposed to the actual stage production. But by the end of it, I was crying, and I only cry at happy things. I never cry at sad things.
Mm-hmm.
I was just crying because it was so joyous and so wonderful and so raucous and so wild. I mean, they let the cameras keep going after the scene was over and through to Mario Peoples. Not Mario Peoples, that's somebody else. Mario Lopez. Mario Lopez, and he would be walking around backstage as they were jumping into golf carts and driving over to the next set. And they had three or four different giant sets and a live studio audience within there that got to clap and whoop when cool things happened, though they didn't mic them for the jokes, and so we didn't get to hear them laugh, which made all the jokes feel like dead space. But it was a huge step forward for television, these live television musicals, and it makes me very excited to see Fox's Rocky Horror this fall. And I'm hopeful that NBC will look at this and say, we can make Hairspray better, because that's the one that they're doing in the fall next year. Because Hairspray is a much, much, much better show than Grease, and really deserves to be just blowing the dump off, or blowing the roof off the dump.
Mm-hmm.
There was a size of scale and scope that was unmatched by any of those. And I think, and I hate to say it, I think it has to be with being on the Warner Brothers lot out in Hollywood, as opposed to being in a soundstage in Brooklyn, where they don't have as much room to expand out. But, gosh, if I were NBC, I'd certainly be thinking about doing it that way instead, because it was real thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
And NBC's got the better material. They just need to up their game. And I should, as everybody's been laying praise at Thomas Kail, who was the stage director for the Broadway smash hit Hamilton. He also did this here, and if he did nothing else other than say, no, we need to make this bigger. No, you've got to listen to me. This has got to go. We've got to see the energy backstage. We've got to feel all of this. And that's what happened. You know, parts of it were dull and leaden and what you would expect from a Grease production, and then other parts were just absolutely soaring, and I loved it. It was great. Did you get a chance to watch?
I watched part of it. I watched mostly. I caught it for about 10 or 15 minutes when I was doing something else, and then I had watched Gallivant.
Yeah, I knew you did.
And I watched a couple of clips of Vanessa Hudgens, and I thought she did a really good job.
She's amazing. So, amazing.
Yeah, it's I watched The Sound of Music, and then Peter Pan sat on my DVR forever, and I never watched it. And I finally just deleted it, and I didn't see The Wiz either.
Of the four, The Wiz is the best. I mean, it just was overall just astounding. And the weakest script. I mean, it's weaker, which is a hard thing. But there was an energy to Grease that almost took it to The Wiz levels. It's just there were too many black holes in the cast and that sort of stuff. And then Sound of Music was fine, and probably third. And then Peter Pan. I liked Peter Pan fine. It was just Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that is going to wrap it up for this week. We'll be back next week to talk about the news, any exciting new plot points, and a brand new theme. I want to say thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, no, I need to tell us who we are, don't I?
Yeah, something like that.
So I've got to do the whole outro. Please subscribe, rate us, leave us a review on iTunes. That's really a terrific thing. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Changing Panels. That's ChangingPanels. You can follow John. That's me at JohnEd970. JohnEd970. You can follow Nick.
That's me.
At Nicky A. Hogan. NickyAHogan. And we love Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
We love Twitter more than Facebook for some reason. But we do. Like I said, we're going to be back next week with more of the same. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
We are to be continued.